Welcome back to the second hour of It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland. It's time for this week's in-depth interview with a special guest from the arts. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Copeland.
Welcome back. If you were with us in the first hour of the show, and if you just joined us, I wanted to let you know that this is a two-hour show in which we balance the creative with the intellectual and explore whether we have more in common than divides us. And we try to do this by featuring thought-provoking conversations out and about with people on the street in the first hour of the show, and in the second hour, inspiring conversations with special guests from the arts. And just to let you know, you can go to the website, itsaquestionofbalance.com, and you can hear podcasts of all previous guests and topics. And if you enjoy this show tonight, you can tell your friends about it and direct them to itsaquestionofbalance.com, and they can hear podcasts there of both hours of the show. Well, this week, as my special guest from the arts, I'm pleased to be interviewing Ihab Shanti, co-founder and CEO of alhoush.com, a physical and virtual expo of Arab art and design, which has become the premier portal for the development of the art and design sector in the Middle East and North Africa. Ihab has been referred to by Al Quds newspaper as the dynamite of the artistic movement, passionate about art and design and their potential to play a profound role in overcoming life's challenges. Ihab and co-founder Rashid Abdelhamid created alhoush.com to empower the art and design community in the Arab world, to serve as a catalyst for creating an economy, and also to shed light on the innovation and tremendous achievements of Arab artists. A Canadian of Arab origin, Ihab is a global outreach and communications expert with over 20 years' experience. He served as the Director of Global Outreach for the Office of Queen Rania of Jordan and was the Head of Communications for the United Nations Development Programme, or UNDP, in Jerusalem. And he says it was then that he saw firsthand the power of art. He helped set up the UNDP annual art auction and has gone on to organise numerous successful artistic and cultural events that have attracted international attention, including This Is Also Gaza, featuring 40 Gazan painters, photographers, filmmakers and video artists, two shows called Colours of the Future, held in Amman and in Abu Dhabi for Jordanian and Emirati artists respectively, and This Is Palestine, an ambitious project with 200 relatively unknown artists, emphasising cultural development and the power of art to transcend reality and create beauty even in situations of conflict and distress. And Ihab completed his education in Canada and holds a Master's of Public Administration from Dalhousie University and several BAs from Carleton University in Art History, Political Science and Interdisciplinary Studies. He has extensive experience in communications, policy development and campaign organisation, and is the president and founder of Amandla Group, which is a strategic communications consulting firm based in Amman. He's also currently serving as an advisor and consultant with several international organizations, such as the United Nations and the World Bank. And speaking of the major community empowerment initiative, which is alhoush.com, Ihab states the role of art is to create a different reality, and that can change things, and that is the philosophy behind what we are doing. Well, welcome to the show, Ihab.
Thank you very much.
It's lovely to talk to you. Thank you. I know it's very early in the morning where you are in Jordan, isn't it?
Yes, so if you hear some birds, please don't mind them. We have some loud birds.
The morning chorus there. Well, we really appreciate you getting up early and getting your wits together to talk to me.
No, it's my pleasure.
Great. Well, as I mentioned, you've been called the dynamite of the artistic movement, and you're clearly passionate about art and design. And I'm wondering if you can remember your earliest encounter with any kind of art, you know, whether it was a book or a picture, but just like the first encounter you had with art and how it affected you?
Well, from very early on in my childhood, I actually used to paint as a child, and then that passion and interest turned into an interest in appreciating art rather than producing it. And from very early on, I was very much fascinated by the character of Picasso and, you know, some of the greats like Michelangelo and Da Vinci and so on. But particularly Picasso. Picasso had an incredible influence on me, on my life. Mm. His ability to innovate was something that I very much admired throughout the time. I've always, since childhood, had a quote by him that there are two kinds of artists: those who could paint the sun like a little dot, or those who can turn a dot into the sun. Mm. And that's something I've always admired. I admired a lot of the way he was committed also to international issues. You know, I've always, since my teenage years, had a painting of the Guernica, which is his famous painting that came to embody human suffering.
Yes, yeah.
And a statement against wars and conflict. I've always had that hanging wherever I was. And so that's how my interest developed into the arts. And then I studied, my first degree was in art history. You know, my father, even though he's, you know, Canadian in every sense of the word, he still had that Middle Eastern tradition of you're either a doctor or an engineer or you're nobody. So just to rebel against that, I switched from architecture to study art history at Carleton. And it was a great eye-opening experience for me. I had I have very fond memory of, I was very fortunate to have some amazing professors teaching me art history, particularly I have a professor who made me gain a deep interest also in Canadian art. I was very much fascinated by the works of the Group of Seven, who and how they tried to use art to develop a sense of Canadian national identity that is different than their European ancestors, etc. So. And then along the way, when I did my master's, I also tried to specialize my master's on the role of cultural institutions, but particularly national galleries, in developing a sense of national identity and changing culture.
Right.
So yeah. That's my interest.
Yeah, gosh, yes. So you, with your father being traditional in that sense, I was going to ask you whether you grew up in a creative environment. Would you say you didn't, that you kind of found art yourself, or were there some creative elements to your upbringing?
My father is an engineer, so I have nothing against engineers. I admire engineers, in fact, and so on. But I think my creativity very much comes from my mother, who's just about one of the most resilient and powerful characters I've ever encountered. Ah. Not just because she's my mother. She's a very strong woman who's deeply committed to social causes and quite an impressive character, so she has always implanted in her children this interest in doing something good for the world, this interest in creativity, and she wrote books about interpretations of dreams, things of that sort. Mm.
Interesting.
So
it sounds like you have been aware, of the power of art for a long time, from when you were relatively young. But there is that quote of you saying that while working for the United Nations Development Programme, you really became aware of the power of art. So could you share a bit about what it was exactly that was going on that, that made you have that sense of what art could do?
Yes. Well, I'm going to tell you a little story, actually, of how Alhosh's origins were developed. Basically, I was traveling with a friend of mine, an American friend of mine, who's in fact a journalist, and we were traveling from Jerusalem to Gaza. And back then, I was the head of communications of UNDP, and we used to go and visit projects that were implemented by the UNDP in Gaza, and the, you know, the office of UNDP normally would show me projects to see if we can highlight them and give them some attention and so on. So the project officer said, we have a very interesting project. We have like 30 young artists who are painting in a park, uh-huh. and we're supporting them and so on. And we thought, and I thought, for a little bit, you know, that's an odd development project to be doing. But then we went and saw them. And I must admit that deep inside, I didn't expect anything of quality or, you know, I expected some, you know, kitsch kind of statements and you know, soldiers, you know, pictures of soldiers, etc. But I was, Jonathan and I were awestruck by the incredible talent that was there, and we were shocked by how could these young people who have seen nothing but Gaza, who have seen nothing but conflict, paint with such beautiful colors. You know, in essence, they were painting with colors and motifs and themes that they did not have, that they've never seen in their lives, because many of them have never been outside of the city. So Jonathan and I came back from Gaza with a sense of sadness, really, that these images, this alternative story, this different narrative than what we know about Gaza, will never see the day, the light of day. And we, from that, from there on, we thought we really need to do something. The world really needs to see these pieces, these beautiful works of art. And, you know, even academically developed, I mean, they were painting German Expressionism and very advanced works. So I came in back then. I had an amazing American boss, the special representative, the late Tim Rothermel, who became sort of like a father to me. And one of the most amazing things about Tim was he gave a carte blanche for creativity. So I said to Tim, you know, I told him the story about these paintings, and I said, I want to do something for them. And he would always say, whenever I come up with any crazy ideas, he was like, go for it, young man, and full support. And so initially we thought we would do an exhibition for them in New York, but then we thought, let's do something in Jerusalem, sort of build a cultural connection between Jerusalem and Gaza. And I came up with the idea of an art auction. And the interesting thing is, all of my colleagues, many of my friends and so on said, Ihab, what the hell are you doing? Nobody's interested in the arts. There's conflict. There's people dying. Why would you do something like this? You know, and we can speak about that in a second. This concept of collective depression, you know what I mean, which art helps change. And we started the art auction. So despite this lack of encouragement and so on, the art auction was a huge success, and people really enjoyed it. And it was a novel idea; it's never been done in Jerusalem, or at least in East Jerusalem, before. And 8 months later, you know, Tim calls me and says, when are we doing the annual art auction? I said, who said it's going to be an annual art auction? He said, well, now it is, because so many people are calling in and asking about it. And they say, we want to buy some art as a Christmas gift, etc. And from there on, this interest in supporting artists and their cause grew.
Yeah. Well, that's an amazing story in the beginning of Al. Now, it's Al Hosh, is it? I've been saying it wrong. Tell me how you say it again.
Yeah.
Al Hosh.
Yeah, it's Al Hosh.
Hosh. Alhosh.com.
Yes.
Well, let's hear some more about that. We're going to go to a break now. But if you just joined us, I'm talking to my arts guest this week, Ihab Shanti, the co-founder and CEO of Al Hosh, Hosh.com. And we'll hear more about that after this break.
Like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com.
About you in the rain. Did I or didn't I say it's forever? Well, I know I said it, babe, it just goes nowhere.
It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made desserts in a friendly, family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Daniel and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copeland, and my special guest from the arts this week, Ihab Shanti, the co-founder and CEO of alhosh.com. We were talking about the pronunciation of it before the break. I just wanted to let listeners know how you spell it. It's alhosh.com. That's alhosh.com. And it's a physical and virtual expo of Arab art and design. So you can go along to the website and have a look at some of the wonderful art that's being displayed there. So we were talking about how you developed this exhibition for the United Nations Development Programme. And then I'm assuming the extension of that was you then got this idea to create alhosh.com.
Yeah, well, I'll...
is there a little bit in between those two things, probably?
Yeah. I'll tell you how it got created, actually. I've, you know, as in my communications work and so on, I always used to tell organizations and individuals and so on, before you communicate, before you go and market yourself or your organization, you need to ask yourself three questions. Who are we? What do we do? And why is it important? And after I had left my position at the Royal Court here in Jordan, I sat in a cafe and I said to myself, you know, you've been telling people and organizations for the past 15 years to ask and answer these three questions. Mm. It's about time you did the same for yourself.
Mm.
Who are you and what are you doing and why is it important? And I thought I had developed, you know, some knowledge of communications, particularly the incredible power of the communications revolution that has happened, that has taken place in the world as a result of the emergence of the internet, mobile communications and social networking, and etc. And so I thought, how can we harness this incredible revolution in communications for the benefit of communities that, I care about? I cared about the arts. I cared about the empowerment of disenfranchised communities, etc. So it was a sort of a marriage between the communications part of my life and the love of art and design and everything that is beautiful in the world that sort of started the spark. The word Al-Hawsh, I'd like to stop on it a little bit.
Mm.
It sounds sort of awkward in the U.S. and so on, but I'm refusing to change it or rebrand it. It's in fact the origin of the word house.
Ah, okay.
If you look at how in the Middle East from 2000 B.C., houses were built around the concept of a courtyard. So you had the nuclear family and various families, but when they want to get together, they would get together in the courtyard.
Mm.
So it became sort of the common space of the house. So in essence, we thought we need to create a common space for artists and designers, because it wasn't only Gaza, it was the entire Arab world. Till this day, every day I'm awestruck by the incredible creativity of Arab artists and designers that nobody knows anything about, and it's this way of telling this alternative story. So, and if you see at the word house in English, it means the shelter, which is the origin of the literal meaning of the word haush in Arabic. So, that's where the word comes from. I'd like to use your show to announce that, in fact, it's no longer going to be just about Arab artists. We're going to extend it beyond where it becomes a common space for all artists and designers from across the world, particularly from conflict zones,
right,
so that we can create a world community, a common space for art and design.
Right.
From around the world.
Oh, how wonderful. Yeah. Well, you heard it first on It's a Question of Balance. I wanted to ask you, there's a lot of stereotyping of cultures in different countries, no matter where one is from. And this seems especially relevant at the present time with so many people, in areas of conflict and trying to migrate all over the world. I'm wondering whether you think art can help break down some of this stereotyping, revealing more complex truths.
Absolutely. I couldn't put it more eloquently than you just did. I'd like to stop first, actually, before I answer that question and use this occasion to give an idea of the complexity of the situation, because you hear about the Middle East and you see things and that are taking place, but the picture is quite a bit more complex than what we are seeing. The Arab world is witnessing an incredible transformation, and it's quite a painful transformation.
Mm.
But you cannot just pinpoint one cause and say this is the cause of what's happening in the Arab world. It's a conflagration of a number of factors. So economists like to identify the economic reasons behind it. You know, communications people like to say, oh, it's because of the communications revolution and so on.
Mm.
But I think a more of a sociological kind of perspective is what's needed in analyzing the Arab Spring, the so-called Arab Spring, and the causes. And you have to really look at all the reasons behind this transformation that is taking place, this enormous and painful transformation that, in my opinion, is going to take a generation, sadly, before it starts bearing fruit. So the Arab world has almost 100 million young people, many of whom are university educated and many of whom are unemployed. So you have an enormous, enormous youth bulge that is not receiving the attention it deserves. This is the giant elephant in the room. So many of these young people are bursting with creativity, are, you know, incredibly talented. They could compete on the world stage any days. But largely because of the transformation that is happening in these societies, you don't have what we call in Canada a meritocracy, whereby, you know, each person gets what he or she deserves. You have corruption, you have a multitude of factors that impede the development of these young people. And, you know, 100 million young people, you know, who need jobs is an enormous challenge. Last year, just to give you some perspective, the United States, the largest economy in the world, was only able to create 4.5 million jobs. So how is the Arab world, with its very weak private sector, with its you know, public institutions that are dysfunctional and, in the worst cases, corrupt and so on, going to create you know, that many jobs and create futures for these young people? So I believe that one element is entrepreneurship and encouraging entrepreneurship and international cooperation between entrepreneurs and so on. The second element is supporting the creative sector. The whole world is dealing with the challenge posited by the Chinese development and the ability of China to compete in manufacturing, you know, what we call comparative advantage to other countries. But where the world can compete with China is in creativity, art, design, and innovation. And the sooner countries realize this, for instance, such as the Scandinavian countries, some of the Scandinavian countries like Finland and Sweden and so on have realized this, that, you know, there has to be a game change in which art and design and the creative sector and innovation is what will give us a comparative advantage with China.
Well, certainly
the same goes for the Arab world.
I was just going to say, certainly, the more easy it is to produce things on a mass scale, and with 3D printing coming, that's going to become even more easy. The more valuable, you know, individually or crafted items become, or you know, so I think that's going to become more and more relevant. I just wanted to add that.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, in order for we cannot be naive about it. These things don't develop without creating an ecosystem that supports them. I mean, it's not. For instance, you're in San Francisco. It's not a coincidence that Silicon Valley in San Francisco and produce some of the greatest innovation in the world. There are conditions that exist for that to happen, and many people try to study what these conditions are, but it's again a multitude, a complex multitude and configuration of a number of conditions: the existence of good universities, the existence of funding and investment, the existence of some security and protection of intellectual rights, etc. So it's a multitude of things that create the conditions for innovation to take place. Now, we go back to the Arab world. Arab world, as I see every day, is bursting with creativity. I see enormous talents on daily basis, people who are incredibly imaginative and creative. And as I said, you know, they paint with colors that they do not have. They paint, they create realities, they create gorgeous designs that are futuristic and so on, but largely because we are living in societies going through these transformations, they are not able to realize their full potential and so on. And this is where we really ought to have an international commitment to this. It cannot be just countries here, because the problems in the region are not going to just affect the region. These are global problems, exactly like climate change is a global problem.
Yes.
The world, I am someone who is deeply committed to the idea of exchange of knowledge, crossing borders, etc., sharing ideas, because ultimately sharing knowledge is the greatest hope that we have as human beings, for the advancement of humanity.
Yes.
And encouraging investment in entrepreneurs in the region is going to be essential.
Yeah. And so partly, or maybe more than partly, what you're doing with Al Haush is enabling some of these people to enter into a kind of artistic economy where they can be seen, but they also have the possibility to create income from their work as well.
Yes, it's basically based on sort of a paradigm shift in the idea of development, whereby it's no longer about assistance. Assistance has proven to have failed. Aid, pure aid, hasn't done many of the countries that received it any good unless it's invested in the right way. And so it's a paradigm shift from the whole concept of assistance to empowerment. And the best way to empower an artist and designer is by allowing them to earn a decent income from their works. This way they don't suffer from what Karl Marx calls the alienation of the worker. It's their work. We are helping them sell their work. And so they have a sense of dignity whilst they're not losing their dignity while selling these works. It's not a charity. It's a social enterprise, and so by showcasing their works and selling it online, and in addition to organizing events that showcase their works, we can help them earn a decent living and encourage them to continue on. And we've had some amazingly touching stories. I mean, I have an artist who sent me a message saying, with a picture of his house destroyed by the war and a picture of his house rebuilt because of artwork that we sold.
Mm.
And that is basically the fodder that keeps me going. It's these stories that we get from artists and designers. But beyond that, we also have designers, a number of designers on Al Haush. So let's say we have an incredible bag designer. Her name is Farah Al-Asmar. Beautiful. She produces an incredibly gorgeous bags. And largely because nobody has invested in her, nobody has showcased her works, etc. She would find it very difficult to compete because of the economies of scale. When she goes to a factory and orders the design of the bags, she can only order 100 while, the factory can produce 1,000 a day, etc. So we try to showcase her works and let the world know that, there are designers who exist in the world. There is artists who are existing even in conflict zones. And when you support a designer, you're not only supporting one person, you're supporting a small economy behind that designer, of people, of manufacturers, of merchandisers, etc., etc. So this is how economies get created. And if you look at the economies of France, of Spain, of Italy, of many of these countries, a central part of their economy is very much based on arts and the creative sector. For instance, if you look at Louis Vuitton company, it's $100 billion company, and it produces, it has 100,000 jobs. Created 100,000 jobs. We're not saying we have, you know, the Louis Vuitton brand. But who knows?
Yeah, who knows, exactly.
Which one of these artists can or designers can develop into a global brand?
Yeah. Well, if you just joined us, you're listening to It's Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest from the arts this week, Ihab Shanti, co-founder and CEO of alhoush.com. That's A-L-H-O-U-S-H.com, which is a forum for Arab art and design. We're going to go to a break now, but we'll be back after these messages.
Did you know about the Santa Cruz Art League on Broadway in Santa Cruz? Founded in 1919, it's 96 years young and provides a wonderful gallery space for local and national artists. It's a great place to view art with 14 shows a year and also to gain support if you're an artist yourself. There are art classes and weekend workshops, many taught by open studio artists. If you become a member, you receive a newsletter, discounts on classes, gifts and exhibit entries, images of your art on the Art League website, and guaranteed participation in the annual members show. It's also a great place to meet artists. Visit the Santa Cruz Art League at 562 Broadway or the website at scal.org. That's scal.org.
This portion of the show is sponsored by Dina Scopatoni, who is an award-winning fashion model, academic teaching modern art history at Cabrillo College, and Vogue fashion photographer. An ocular centrist, Dina's photographs range from fashion editorials to soul-catching portraits to evocative documentary images. The vibrant nature of her work evokes the glamour of Mario Testino, Annie Leibovitz, and Helmut Newton, while expressing an understanding of composition and contrast which is all her own. Trained as an art historian at the University of London's esteemed Courtauld Institute, Dina Scopatoni looks for the intellectual and visual contrasts in each of her photographs. If you're interested in viewing her wonderful work, you can go to dinascopatoni.com. That's DinaScopatoni.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest from the arts this week, Ihab Shanti, co-founder and CEO of alhoush.com. And we've been talking quite a bit about the socio-economic benefits of art and what alhoush is offering. I'd like to talk a bit about maybe the emotional, psychological benefits. Social constructionism tells us that society and the individuals within it are socially constructed. That is, their significance and identity are negotiated through discourses and are not facts that exist in an existentialist way. And it seems to me that the discourses surrounding a lot of what is going on in the Middle East are being imposed from the outside rather than from within. And I see art as an expressed voice. When we have no voice in any other way, expressing through art is one way that we can communicate with people. And I'm wondering whether you feel that art and the platform that you're offering with alhoush for people to get that art out into the world is one way that people in that area can change the discourse about their communities.
Absolutely. Again, I cannot put it more eloquently than how you did. It is ultimately, basically, human beings are ultimately a story, a narrative. And that narrative is quite fluid. It changes with time, and it is influenced by the conditions that influence that human being. And art is one of the most powerful tools. It's a visual communication tool that can tell that story.
Non-verbal, and, I think, often. You know, I mean, obviously,
non-verbal. Yeah, so, you know, there is this, there's been a lot of studies about 80% of human communications is actually visual. So the power of an image is multifold more powerful than anything we say or write. So art gives a voice to a human being like no other tool. It's a tool of communication that, as I said, can transcend reality, but can also change the discourse and very much influence what is going on and so on. So, and it is one of the only tools that is universal in terms of communication. So you really don't need to understand the language to understand a painting. A human being in Germany could identify with an artwork from the Sudan. It's a universal language, just like music is. And it has the ability to alter reality. That is to say, again, we go back to that statement by Picasso. Some artists can, you know, transform a little dot into the sun. There's nothing more powerful than, you know, the iconography of art and the symbols, and it literally has the ability to change the discourse and change the narrative.
Yeah.
But most importantly, give individual voices. You know, each person, each artist is trying to tell their story ultimately. And if they can do it in the universal language of art, it's all the more remarkable as a tool for communicating with the world.
Yeah. You've mentioned Picasso a lot, and one of my favorite psychologists, Alice Miller, studied artists, of whom Picasso was one, because she was very interested in the ability of art to help process and heal trauma. And she felt that the artists are people who are able to channel trauma in their lives. And Picasso, early on in his life, had a traumatic experience with an earthquake that she responds to or sort of talks about when he was a young child. But people who are able to channel it effectively through art, in her estimation, are able to deal with trauma and have the potential to heal from it in a different way. I'm wondering if that's something that you see as a potential also for people in areas of conflict.
Absolutely. That's something I see every day. I mean, when we are dealing with artists from Gaza or dealing... I mean, at the beginning, when we set up Al-Hawsh, we said we're going to focus on areas of conflict. And back then it was Gaza and Iraq. But, you know, sadly, much of the region now is experiencing conflict and trauma. So now we're looking at amazing works by Syrian artists, by other artists. Absolutely. I mean, the research is and the science on this is clear. Art is one of the best forms of therapy, individual therapy for human beings. But beyond that, I looked at the works of Martin Seligman. I'm very fascinated by this whole notion of, you know, how the loss of optimism is a central component to depression. He's done 20 years of clinical research on this, on the relationship of optimism and depression. And art is one of the amazing tools in which you can rebuild that optimism. You can relearn and use the experience of traumas to transcend reality and build, create something new that has nothing to do with the reality that you're living in. And I find that fascinating, you know, that the ability of art for learned optimism, which is the topic of Siegelman's book. But also the ability to communicate is also central to, you know, overcoming traumas and challenges. And I've seen this in being conflict zones. There are two kinds of people. Or you really, when you confront a trauma, you're confronting a choice.
Yes.
Either you focus inwards and get self-consumed by self-pity, etc., or you use your trauma and the challenges that you faced to create something new and share it with the world and give and so on. And some of the most amazing human beings I've met, particularly in conflict zones, were people who were able to transcend their trauma or use the trauma because of their suffering, were able to create something so beautiful, something so radically different that they would give to the world. And art is no exception.
Yeah, it's making me think of there's a wonderful elegant folk artist, Tyler Stenson, and one of his songs, the lyrics are, "There are wars being waged, they are not your voice." And I think that part of what we're talking about here is the ability for people to have their own unique voice and be able to express that, often in situations where everybody's kind of globbed together, certainly from the outside, you know, there's just one view of everything and everyone. And yet everybody within that has their own individual experience, which I imagine is very empowering to be able to express and would give you a sense of optimism just to be able to say, hello, I'm here on this earth and this is who I am and this is what I see and this is what's meaningful to me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's part of, I mean, they say that the first victim during wars is the truth. And indeed, one of the greatest victims in wars is this lumping of people together. I mean, you know, when I watch the news and I see, I mean, you look at, and I can understand, I can sympathize.
Yes.
Because when you look at what's coming from the news and you see ISIS or ISIL and you see all of these things, you would think that, you know, this is the Middle East. But, you know, unless you've visited the Middle East, you will never know that this is not the Middle East. This is a very small, tiny group that is gaining momentum largely because of the problems that have existed. But in no way does this resemble the complexity of the region and the complexity of what is happening and the reasons behind, as I tried to discuss early on in the interview. And so it's the ability to paint a more complex picture, to challenge established paradigms, to challenge the perceived wisdom that art can do, art and design can do like no other communications tool. I mean, I'll give you examples of we go back to Picasso. During, you know, I worked at the UN, and right outside the Security Council, there's a painting, a replica of the Guernica. And I read somewhere about, you know, when they were announcing the war on Iraq, the second war, somebody asked for the painting to be covered because they found it so challenging to be talking about war while that, this is the power of art.
Yes.
You know, the Guernica, the original Guernica, there's been many attempts to bomb the painting. So what is it that is challenging these folks in these paintings so much that they would feel necessary that the painting gets bombed? That's the power of art. The power of art to convey messages. I, you know, I've studied art throughout. I have not seen a painting that communicates something that's not universal, you know.
Right, that everyone can respond to. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. By nature, art is about is a form of human communications that everyone identifies with. Every human being identifies with.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, if you think of the earliest cave paintings, when, you know, at that time people's main concern was just surviving, and they're still producing art, have an impetus to produce art, I think that really clearly shows that. We've got just a few minutes left of the interview, Ihab, so I wanted to ask you what you're hoping for Al Hausch going forward.
Al Hausch is now 3 years old. It has gone through tremendous challenges, like any enterprise and startup goes through. But also, it has persevered and grown quite large organically.
Right.
We don't face the same challenges as a startup in San Francisco. We face those challenges, but much more compounded challenges, such as, you know, the challenge of moving paintings across conflict zones,
right?
The logistical challenges. It has been nothing short of a nightmare to try and run something as pioneering as Al Hausch in this region. But despite and in spite of all of these challenges, I am again optimistic that we're going to, we are in the right direction. At the very least, we're going to be able to tell the story that is not being told about. Art and design and its power to change reality and its power to help communities, disenfranchised communities, develop. So that's the, that's the essential passion that is motivating us.
Yes.
But in practical terms, as I said, the ultimate aim is to grow Al Hausch so that it becomes a global portal supporting artists and designers from across the world. I've always believed in this think globally, act locally. We have acted locally, and
Now you're thinking globally.
The past 3 years, let's say that the past 3 years have been sort of the pilot where we tested whether there'd be interest, and the interest has been tremendous in Al Hausch. But now we need to develop the technology. We need to open it up so that every artist and designer from across the world can join Al Hausch and hopefully create a kind of a movement a common space for artists and designers.
Well, I wish you all the very best with that. I am really grateful that you came on the show, and it was very inspiring to hear about everything that you're doing. So thank you very much, Ihab.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Thank you. And I want to let listeners know again that they can go to the website, alhausch.com. That's alhoush.com. I'd definitely encourage you to go and look at some of the amazing art there, and also watch this space for Al Hausch developing into a global proposition as well, supporting the arts. Just to remind you again, you can go to the website, it's aquestionofbalance.com, and I will see you next week.